Hello, and welcome to AP Table Talk, a podcast where we explore board games and what makes them interesting to us. And by us, I mean our hosts, myself, Brian, and...
And I'm Dave.
Hey, Dave. Okay, so this is our second episode. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about this week?
In this episode, we are going to discuss the Moncala mechanic.
Okay, Moncala mechanic. Okay, so... When I think about that mechanic, the first thing that comes to mind when I try to define it, I think about the movement part of that mechanic, where you kind of pick up all the pieces in one space and place them one at a time in order around the next spaces until you run out of pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is one of the most iconic parts of Moncala, and probably the thing that a lot of players will see most of. But according to BGG, the description on the site there is, in a typical Moncala mechanism, players pick up tokens in one space and then place them one by one in spaces in a specific direction around a circle, with the last space being placed having special significance. So you talked about those individual pieces, picking them up and putting them into those individual spaces. So I think that's one of the aspects of this mechanic a lot of people are going to be able to identify with.
Yeah. And I think when I looked more into it, I realized it's almost like two mechanics mixed together. There's mm-hmm. the movement portion that I described. And then that last part where the space that you end up in has a special action. Mm-hmm. And I almost call the first part kind of sewing. I've heard it described as the sewing action. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, your special action. So, yeah, it is kind of a combination of two, but sewing, I noticed, is not a mechanic, at least in the Board Game Geek list on its own.
I think there might be a mechanic in there where it is you're building up to something in the future, which is right. Kind of like what you see with Moncala. Kind of blanking on what that is specifically, but no doubt we'll cover it in a future episode.
Right. Okay, so I guess we'll go through some examples that we have. Shall we roll
for initiative?
All right.
All right, on your count.
Go ahead. I got a 3.
I got 15.
All right.
So I'll lead off on this one. So when we were discussing this before, we were talking about our top 3 games that have the Moncala mechanic. So I'm going to go with my number 1 first, which is the earliest incarnation of it. So for me, it was actually playing the game that my mom taught me, which is Moncala, using the board that she used when she was a kid. And it was that definition straight up, meaning that each of the pots, which is what we call where you put the seeds in, started out with some seeds, and you'd pick all the seeds up from one pot and go all the way around the board in order to deposit it across from a pot that had all the seeds in an attempt to capture them. My number 2 on this list here is probably the biggest game that has the Moncala mechanic. And the one that I think would be the most popular would be Five Tribes. I know that it's an older game, and Trajan also uses the Moncala mechanic, but I think Five Tribes is one of the more modern games that has popularized the mechanic over time. It's kind of iterated on it a little bit compared at least to the original Moncala game. And then my third choice, and the one that I think is interesting here, is one that actually Brian and I were playing on BGA recently. That's Board Game Arena, is Crusaders Thy Will Be Done, which I think is interesting because wherever you're depositing your individual beads on your rondel using this Moncala mechanic, triggers something that happens on a board or battles or building or anything else, which I think is kind of cool and something that we're going to be talking about later. So how about you, Brian? What are some Moncala examples for you?
All right. So we have a bit of overlap here, but I think the first one being kind of the most iconic and given its namesake is Moncala itself. And I think the one, again, most people are familiar with is kind of the 1940s version with your, I think it's 12 spaces plus the end pockets. And I think at least amongst the bigger board gamers, they've played this at some point or another, whether they remember the rules and things like that. But yeah, it's hard to discuss the Moncala mechanic without Moncala itself. I also think that Bruno Cathala's Five Tribes is a pretty obvious choice for this one. I think I would even call it his biggest game. Now, that being said, I put it on this list because it kind of comes up obvious to me, and I don't think I've actually played it yet, but I know that it uses the mechanic.
And it's it's probably one of his biggest games, but I don't know. I mean, he has design talking.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a lot out there, but I think it's definitely up there for one that people would kind of label as one of his big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then my third one I actually first saw this game on Kickstarter when I had just started and hadn't wasted all my money in Kickstarter. It was called Tack. It's an abstract game.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on a game that was actually in a fantasy novel from 2011, part of the Kingkiller Chronicles series. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Dave.
No, I didn't even know it was actually part of a novel.
Yeah, it was described in the novel, and then I forget the designer, but they basically realized the game. And I just really liked that they kind of brought this history to the game, and the pieces were really, it reminded you of almost the kind of the grace that a really nice chess set has.
Mm-hmm.
With talk, and I want to some it changes up the mechanic a little bit, but it has the same kind of sewing movement. And one of the differences is it has a few different pieces that when they land on certain spaces can do special things. But I'll be discussing it more later on in this episode.
Nice, cool. Well, that provides a good major examples of Mancala. Let's jump into our likes for the mechanic. We'll roll for initiative again.
Sure. All right. All right. I'm ready.
3, 2, 1, roll.
I got a 14.
I got 3, so you can lead.
Okay. So my first like that I have listed here is I like how the simplicity of the mechanic. And by that, I mean it is a mechanic I find that is easy to learn or teach, but can still provide some very strategic elements to that. What's your first like?
So mine, I think, echoes a lot of what you said. I wrote down specifically, the Mancala mechanic offers a very, quote-unquote, short visual puzzle to solve. My specific game that I like to reference here is Fruit Picking, which we've also played on Board Game Arena. I own a copy. I really like that aspect because I don't feel like I'm going to be paralyzed by decision. I can look at the individual seeds that are in those individual farms in Fruit Picking, and I can kind of map out my moves one or two turns in advance. So I like the fact that it's still a visual puzzle, but it's not something that's overwhelming.
Yeah, I agree. Fruit Picking does give you that kind of simple, you can kind of lay it out and see where that next move is going to take you. Now, to contrast that, I will say that when I was researching this episode a little bit and watching a little bit of a playthrough of Five Tribes, because of the way the mechanic is implemented in that game, I almost think that for some people it could be the opposite because of how much is going on in Five Tribes.
Mm-hmm.
You could leave yourself with a lot of AP in analysis paralysis in your movement, trying to math it out.
Mm-hmm.
But Fruit Picking is kind of the converse to that because it is a little bit of a simpler game, which yeah. Actually is also one of my second like is kind of that satisfaction you get when your movement works out and you're able to chain some things. And mm-hmm. again, my example is Fruit Picking because you get that free move when you land on the Harvest House.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to chain the Harvest House with kind of picking a market card and then doing the Harvest House again to refill up your kind of your currency.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That really gives me that sense of satisfaction when that works out.
Yeah. And I think that that being able to chain things, I think is something we see in a lot of other games too. Just basically like finding that synergy, being able to chain different things. My second like is the building up of future actions by dropping tokens on them. And that's something that we've experienced when we've been playing Crusaders That Will Be Done. In that the dropping of the beads around the rondelle on that mechanic allows you to really set up a big, big future action. But the actions leading up to it, at least on the rondelle, also benefit from that action. Now, there's a lot of play in how those individual beads on the rondelle build up. But I like that in Crusaders, Thy Will Be Done, you can have like a really, really big action if you do enough of the prior actions leading up to it.
Right. Yeah. Building up that space with a lot of pieces. And they even managed to mitigate that, because I know that at one point in our last game, I had a ton of pieces and I didn't really want to use that action.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized is if you do the upgrade where you get to flip a space to have two different actions, mm-hmm. you get to dish out pieces from any of these spaces.
Yep.
Which I did not read that rule ahead of time. So that was a good surprise for me.
Well, you're the only one, I think, upgrading that game. I just stayed with the vanilla starting like pie slices for this rondelle and just went from there.
I was tempted to not upgrade, but I felt that maybe the same reason you did, I felt it was less efficient because I wasn't getting an action done. But the fact that I could spread the pieces out on a travel space, and I didn't need to move very much at that point. Mm-hmm. So I had a bunch of pieces on travel and it let me kind of distribute them again.
Yeah.
And not fully waste a turn.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was interesting.
I also think there's that opportunity cost, right? In that when you do that action, it's kind of null, right? Because you mm-hmm. get to upgrade, but you do get to, you know, distribute your beads around the rondelle. But yeah. In the future, since that slice of your pie has been upgraded, you now have two actions you can take and then
right.
Divide those beads as you like based on those actions.
Right. And you mm-hmm. could either take that as an opportunity to distribute those beads, but also if you're more concerned about having that double action, you definitely want to get those upgrades maybe earlier, but not too early. Mm-hmm. It's a good trade-off kind of gamble.
Yep.
Exactly. So my third like that I have there, which I do... maybe it's not specific to the mechanic, but specific to some of the abstracts that use the Moncala mechanic, is that in my experience, they tend to have a really nice component feel because a lot of your time is spent holding those pieces. So the Moncala sets that I've played will have either nice kind of glass beads or whatever, which are nice to kind of and scoop out of those rounded slots and move them around. And there's always something to be said about nice components. Like I've always liked the Hive Bakulite mm-hmm. Pieces. Just nice to hang on to.
And same thing with Azul, the first Azul too.
Yes, very nice. The original pieces. Azul pieces. I've heard that the newer Prince pieces are not as nice.
Mm.
And Tack, again, another one that has some nice components.
Right. It's funny you said that, because that's actually my third one as well. I said that the beads and tokens can be used to serve up a very tactile sensory experience. I say this as someone that attempts to play Go, but is not very good at playing Go. Just holding the stones in your hand as you think about your move is a very calming experience. And I think that for a game like Moncala that has very limited components, being able to have that tactile sensory experience is really a positive aspect for this game. And I think for any type of game that uses the Moncala mechanic in general.
Yeah, that, I agree, definitely. I'd like to have those nice pieces in any game, but because you're handling the pieces so much in a Moncala mechanic, it's extra nice to have those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of wraps up my likes. Do you have any additional ones you wanted to add?
No, that's it. Should we roll for initiative for dislikes?
Sure.
All right. So ready when you are.
Yep.
And go.
17.
5. So you get the lead.
Okay. Dislikes. Okay. I've only got a couple here.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the game, depending on the player type, I guess. For some people, this Moncala mechanic could slow the game down. Again, mm-hmm. with that ability to count out your spaces and kind of math everything out, I could see some people that don't like to estimate taking really long turns, being able to count everything out. And that's always something that kind of bothers me as I sit and watch people count out every possibility of their turn.
Right. Mine, and you actually brought this up actually in likes, is depending on the game, Moncala can actually be very analysis paralysis prone. And the game I bring up as an example is Five Tribes. And I've kind of been a victim of this myself, because when you have different components, and these are the meeples in five tribes, and you have many different directions in which you can drop them in, that creates a many more different permutations for how you could distribute these beads or tokens or workers or what have you. I think, again, now comparing five tribes to fruit picking is a lot more simple because all of the components are the same, and you can really only go in one direction, which is clockwise. Five tribes kind of flies in the face of that. And with those many new options, it is, yes, very easily to fall into analysis paralysis.
Yeah, yeah, definitely see that. I also saw that sentiment given in the Shut Up and Sit Down review of Five Tribes. They mm-hmm. talked about that, and kind of I think Quinn's response to that is that instead of trying to play the best move, you should just be trying to play a good move,
mm-hmm.
Because the game state changes so much from turn to turn that you can't really. That mathing it out, yeah, it takes you a long time, but it doesn't actually benefit you that much in that game. Again, I can only kind of just quote what they said because I haven't played that game myself.
All right.
That's all I have for this. Oh, sorry, I do have another one.
Okay.
This I've heard in specifically in Moncala where the game is a little simpler. Some people can find that mechanic repetitive. If that is, I mean, in Moncala, that's kind of what you're doing the entire game. So I could see if you're just playing game after game, it might be too simple for people, a little bit repetitive to do that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's a minor one on mine, but.
Right. Yeah, I think it's all right because, you know, if you consider Moncala, you know, more in the vein of the abstract games, you're basically doing the same thing every core loop. You just will look at the board state or the game state and try to make the best decision you can. Mine, and you brought this up actually in likes as well, and this brings me back to my memories of playing Moncala with my mom, is the beads. And you specifically talked about like glass beads for that tactile sensory mm-hmm. experience. For me, it was always like, can you count or can you not count?
Right.
And the way the glass beads play into this is when you have a pile of them, you know, like in a pot on the Moncala board, it's very difficult to count in there.
Right. So you kind of have to just, unless you're allowed to stick your finger in there and kind of move them around and actually count it out once the pile is big.
Right. But I mean, right. I've heard some stories where like you can't, even if you do track it mentally, how many mm-hmm. seeds are in each individual pod, you're not supposed to. So I think it's an interesting part of like the magic circle and like what the individual rules are for the game. You know, like, is right. it explicit? Can you count? Can you not count? What is the method of counting, et cetera? So I think that's one of the aspects of the game that I think is, it's not necessarily bad or good, but it's up for debate depending on a lot
yeah,
of
yeah, I think that applies to a lot of games. I think that my general philosophy personally is that I don't ever really like that fully mathing out your turns.
Mm-hmm.
I like to just go with that gut feeling. And I mean, it's situational. Obviously, sometimes there's that one last really big move that you kind of have to be, well, this could make or break the thing. So I'm going to mm-hmm. math out my two choices and figure it out. But generally, I find that to be a little annoying to play against. So I avoid doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that everyone kind of has their nitpicks on how they like to play that out.
Right. Yeah. And I got one more dislike.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it is that, and this has especially hindered me several games now with fruit picking, is that it can take one too many turns to charge up to take the action that you want to take. And I think that's kind of like the trade-off with fruit picking. There's only one direction you can go in. Right. All of the beads are homogenous so that they're the same. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like when you look at Crusaders, that will be done. You can take that upgrade action and kind of distribute your beads in the best like way possible. But in fruit picking, I find myself being like one move away from being able to, you know, trigger the end of the game and not being able to do it because I don't have the beads in the right position. So that's really like my dislike, but I guess it really depends on the application of this mechanic.
Right. And I do even see also in the Crusaders, they kind of mix that up a little bit with the variable player powers. Because I noticed that one of the player powers is that you can choose to go around the Mirandel in either direction.
Mm-hmm.
And, which was interesting as well.
And there's another faction that I played with actually during our first game where you can choose where to begin laying out the beads, either in the next space or in the space that you just resolved.
Yeah, so it gives you a little bit of agency there to kind of get out of a certain situations. But but also they twist up that that mechanic a little bit. Well, actually, this brings us into our next section, the twists and variations, because they kind of twist it up because you, yeah, I'm jumping ahead of our role for initiative here, but I'll finish my point here and then we'll do that. They change up that mechanic because your special action is taken first instead of where your beads land. You choose your action space first. But yeah, let's go ahead and do our roll here, and then we can do our other variations.
All right, I'm rolling.
I got a seven. Six. All right, you just beat me.
All right. So me, and I talked a little bit about this before, which is the use of the beads in the game, I think, offer up a lot of opportunities for iterating on this. So like I said, like with fruit picking and also with Crusaders That Will Be Done, all of the beads are homogenous. They're all the same thing. Whereas with Five Tribes, the color of those different meeples and those different workers allow you to do different things based on where they land. So I think having different colored beads, different colored components, maybe even having different colored, like, you know, pots where you where you deposit them, and you kind of see that with Five Tribes as well, offers up a lot of ability to kind of change up how you can use this mechanic. However, I think you also have to be careful about engaging in some analysis paralysis that some players may have with those additional options. How about you, Brett?
That's a little bit related to my first variation here, which is in the game TAC. You actually have, so you are building a road. Your pieces are stones that create a road from one side of the board to the other. It's and each player, it's a two-player game. Each player has their, let's just say, white pieces or black pieces, and you can place them where you want, and you move them in that sewing method where you pick up a stack and then you place them as many as you want down at a time in one direction. So you and they vary the mechanic in a number of ways. One in that you can pick up as much of the stack as you want. You don't have to take the whole thing. And you can put down as many pieces as you want as you go along as well. And one of the twists there is you can only pick up stacks where your colored pieces at the top, where where they say you control the stack. So again, they're using the different colors to kind of change the action that you can do on the space.
Interesting. I haven't played it before, but now I kind of want to.
Yeah, we should try that one out for sure. I like that one. It's up there for me. I wanted to own it basically because it looked really good, and then the game itself interested me after that.
Right. I think my next twist and variation that I could see on this mechanic is that, kind of like you said before, action selection, depending on where you land. I think you brought up a good point about Crusaders in that you resolve the action first of that spot, and then you distribute the beads around. So I think if you use the Mancala mechanic as sort of a framework for doing something else, I think I could see some iteration here. We haven't recorded the episode yet, but you know, one of the recent mechanics that I like and I got really into is trick taking, and I like seeing different iterations and how they can be used. I think one of my favorite new iterations of that is the game Brian Boru with trick taking. Likewise, I think the Mancala mechanic doesn't get as much love as it could get because it is, yes, I would say a quote-unquote simple mechanic, but it doesn't mean that it's not something that has a solid framework that you can build off of. So I'd like to see greater variety in how actions are resolved on the Mancala, basically when you pick up the beads or when you drop the beads or wherever the beads land at the very end.
Yeah. And my next one actually is also going back to Crusaders That Will Be Done again. One thing that they also did, in addition to doing the action from the starting space, the power of the action being related to the number of pieces on the space was also another interesting, and I guess that's sort of related to fruit picking as well, where the number of pieces you had at the harvest house was your currency, essentially. So you're trying to make sure you have pieces there before you land on the space that you want. So essentially using the number of pieces on a space as another piece of the puzzle.
Yep. And I think that determining, and you brought this up too with TAC, which I want to play and kind of like sink my teeth into because you made it sound really interesting, is that that action selection. And I could see right now, I'm thinking about marrying something like the Mancala mechanic with area control, where right. you do have different colored, you know, beads in those individual pots, but you can control a pot based on which was the last bead placed or whoever has the majority of beads in there. So I think looking at maybe you do design a game that has the Mancala mechanic, but you marry it with some other mechanics and, you know, kind of make it like part of the skeleton, part of the structure, or a complementary mechanic. But an additional one that I had was using the action selection to determine, you know, like what happens with that pot. You know, in most Mancala games, whenever you resolve an action, you're going to have to move those beads around, but perhaps you don't. You know, perhaps you offer up a different option for players. Perhaps right. you move it in a counterclockwise or clockwise. Perhaps you remove it from the game. Maybe use it as part of scoring or something else. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to iterate on that.
Yeah, actually, speaking of that, again, when we discuss the definition itself, I tend to associate the sewing mechanic part of the Mancala mechanic as the mechanic itself. Mm-hmm. But if I look at it the other way, actually one of my favorite games, Istanbul, mm-hmm. Where you move your two spaces and you, they change it a little bit in that you are either picking up your assistant or dropping off your assistant and then doing that action in that space. Mm-hmm. But the ability to, you're not necessarily doing the sewing part, but you're getting to that space to do your action and also either picking up piece or dropping off piece to allow you to continue to chain your engine that you're building in that game, which I really remember finding that very unique when I was introduced to that game.
Yeah. And we played it too. And I think it has its staying power.
Yeah. I think I was introduced to that with your PAX friends that we
first year we went to PAX. I just wanted to bring up this one last quotation. So a lot of the influence for these episodes are the book on board game mechanics by Jeff Engelstein and Isaac Shalev. And I wanted to read a quotation from the book that I think is really apropos for our discussion and, you know, what we discussed so far. So both Jeff and Isaac said about Mancala specifically, these systems have a lot of opportunity for clever play and are highly interactive as pieces from all players are commingled and directly impact the options available to each. One thing that I don't think either of us addressed in the episode so far is the fact that the Mancala does not necessarily need to be a game state mechanic. You can have individuals have their own individual rondel. And, you know, that is the basis for Crusaders, but we didn't really identify it as that. That is your rondel. That is you moving things on your Mancala. Whereas many of the other games we talked about before, they include a Mancala that is part of the global game state. So everyone looks at that one board and they make decisions based on how it's set up there.
Yeah, actually, we kept going through the examples and that didn't even occur to me because fruit picking, again, you have your own board, which is even not necessarily set up the same as the other player's board. I think that's a variant that you can either have symmetrical boards or different boards. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of the times, yeah, you're playing on a global board. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting, I guess that's an interesting variation we didn't have on our list there as well.
Yep.
Well, that's all I have for twists and variations. Did you have any more that you wanted to add?
Nope, that's all for me.
Okay. In our last episode, we got into talking about kind of some of the history of the mechanic. Now, this one was a little more on the nose because the mechanic itself is kind of named after the game that mm-hmm. followed. I did look into it a little bit. And mm-hmm. So the Mancala that I think most people are familiar with is actually not as old as it seems. It's based on a series of games in the Kala collection from around the 1940s. Mm-hmm. But that type of mechanic, I think, has been traced back to like ancient Egypt, mm-hmm. 3000 BC or something like that, and they've seen versions of it popping up throughout history through the third century and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I think most people are what they're familiar with the game Mancala is kind of a modern version, which is really just from the 1940s. Which, when we talk about old board games, is not that old. Mm-hmm. Definitely older than the modern games we're used to kind of covering and exploring now. But
yeah, I think that when I was also doing some research, I discovered the same thing. So there's different aspects about the history of the game. One thing I thought was interesting was that it really doesn't require a whole lot of components, to the point where some versions of the game can just be played by just digging into the earth and making those individual pots there and using stones or seeds for the actual components of the game. So it doesn't require a lot, kind of similar to checkers. It just requires a gridded surface and those individual components. What I thought was interesting, though, was that there are some instances of the Mancala game that we know today. It's actually carved into stone. So it's not necessarily like a portable gaming board, but rather it's something that's built into a space similar to how you would see like chess and checkers boards built into park tables.
Right. Yeah. And I think you find that a lot with the older games, again, similar to Go, where it's like, well, you can just use any slightly off-colored set of stones and a grid that you can scrape into a rock or whatever, and you can play that game. I remember watching people doing their desert island top five games or whatever the number was, and the arguments were always, well, I'm not going to bring Go because I can just find rocks and I can do Go, and that is whether that was a whether that was against the spirit of the list or not. That's pretty much all I had on kind of any other facts about that. I don't know if you looked up anything else related to Mancala.
Nope, just that in preparation for this episode, I tried to marry again two mechanics together. Like I said earlier on, trick taking is one of those mechanics that is become a sort of a new renaissance for me. So I embarked on a journey of trying to combine Mancala mechanic with trick taking. And I'm using the individual beads as a scoring mechanic. So you actually will play a trick. Whoever wins the trick can score beads based on wherever they land, and other people can follow the trick or not follow the trick, etc. So still working on it right now, but I'm hoping it'll lead to something new. Building on Mancala and trick taking.
I'll look forward to playtesting that with you.
All right.
So I guess that wraps up our Mancala episode of AP Table Talk. If you'd like to hear more content like this, please be sure to subscribe. You can also check out more of our content, projects, and other information about us on universityxp.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'd also love it if you took some time to rate the show. We live to lift others with learning, so if you found this episode useful, consider sharing it with someone who could also benefit. Until next time, game on.